Mary Frances Clark at her residence in Louisville, Kentucky. The date is October 16, 2002. The interviewer is Mike Jones from the Kentucky Historical Society. Ms. Clark, when and where were you born?
I was born in Shipperville, Kentucky in the year 1938. So that makes me a senior citizen.
Okay. Did you grow up in Shelbyville?
I grew up in Shelbyville, until I was age of three. In the age of three, my family moved down to Louisville, Kentucky. And I guess you know, Louisville really is my home where I actually grew up in from three years up until the present time.
You have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister, two sisters, as a matter of fact. One is deceased, and I have a stepbrother.
Okay. What schools did you attend in Louisville?
The school that I attend, the elementary school, was called Booker T. Washington on Jackson Street. From there, I went to the school adjacent to that, which was Jackson Junior High School. From Jackson, then I went to Central High School.
Okay. At this point, what did you know about the military, and have you had any relatives in the military, or was this something you thought about as a youth, or?
I knew nothing of the military. My parents were not military oriented. And I learned it after my internship when I was living in Ohio. There was a dietitian who worked with me. Actually, I learned about the military when I was working in Chicago. There was a fellow dietitian. She was a therapeutic dietitian, as I was. And she told me that she had been in the military for 4 years as a dietitian. And at this time, I was also interested in a job change. So from that point on, I asked her questions, and she told me about her experiences. And then I decided to sign up for there. And that was in June. I went into the military 27 June 65. So from 65 up until the present time, I have some connections with the military.
Okay. Backtrack just a little bit. After you graduated high school, what did you do?
From high school, senior high, I went to Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio. And that's where I got my undergraduate degree in dietetics, a BA in dietetics. And then from Central State University, I went to a hospital called the Miami Valley Dayton Hospital, where I did my internship for a year. And from an internship for a year, I went to Chicago, and I worked at the Veterans Research Hospital. And that is where I met the dietitian prior to me going into the Air Force.
What year was that again?
When
you went to Chicago?
Chicago, I said military 65, I said about 63.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So when you enlisted, did you went in?
No, I was not enlisted. I had direct commission because I went in as an officer, as a first lieutenant, because of my professional training and education. I went as a first lieutenant into the Air Force.
Did you attend an officer school? Or?
We had an officer training, actually. It was in Gunner Air Force Base, Alabama, where we learned how to wear the uniform and some of the marching techniques and know some of the rules and regulations about being an officer. But that was only for about a month. It might be even less than that. But it was not actually training. Being that I was professional, there wasn't much training that they could impose on me because I had the skill already. I just had to learn how to be a soldier.
So you went right to work,
continuing
what you had been doing.
That's okay. Right. Okay. Exactly right.
Where was your first?
My first
station?
Assignment was at the Tinker Air Force Base, which is in Oklahoma. I went there actually surprisingly as the only dietitian with no prior training or experience, but because of my experiences, I was assigned there as the only dietitian. I had to learn the hard way what I learned. And I learned also there the meaning of being in charge.
Okay. Now, what were your first impressions of the military as far as in general, as far as did you see other minorities? Did you often find yourself the only black person dealing with?
My first impression of the military, I'm not sure what I wanted to expect. I knew that I was ready for a changing job. I suppose I was very excited about it because I saw the uniform and I was kind of impressed with that for the first time. But and also I went into the idea of just being a professional, not so much of knowing anything about the military service. I'm trying to relate here some of my thoughts at the time. I guess I've been in just function as a dietitian.
Okay.
Basically, that's been my first impression about being in the military. And that's not a very clear description, but I think as time goes on, I can kind of refresh my memory.
Well, one thing I wanted to add to or ask you about was around 65, I mean, you have that civil rights is going strong. What does that?
Yes, it does ring the bell.
Okay.
It rings a bell. It rings a bell when I actually, going back to Gunter, where we had the training, was in Alabama. I can remember I had some white counterparts. They were from the north, from the eastern states, and we were all going out one evening, just socialized. We had finished our training, we just wanted to be together, and they invited me to go out with them. And that time I realized that I was in Alabama. And I realized that, hey, that I don't think I should go with you. And they didn't understand the reason why I felt that way until I told them that I'm in Alabama, and that time I knew of the civil rights issues. So therefore, I stayed on base all the time. I was afraid to venture off because I knew of the problems that were occurring in the U.S. at that time.
Well, did you hear stories of any other soldiers or any interact with anyone else who had problems when they left the base or know of any incidents?
No, I didn't.
In particular?
I didn't know of an instance, but being in the military in the southern state, they try to make you inform the problems of the area. I would give the military, Air Force, that credit. They make an effort to make you inform of the issues that you might have to face on the outside to get you prepared for that. And of course, with that background, with that education that I had learned, it kind of put a fear in me to some degree of not venturing out too much because I didn't know what to expect. Even though I'm from Kentucky, I had faced racial issues, but now to be away from home, from family, I didn't know quite how to handle it. So I just was trying to protect myself as much as I knew how.
Okay. So your first assignment was in
Tinker Air Force Base.
Okay. How long?
In Oklahoma. I was there for about 3 years. I went there in 65 to 67.
Okay.
And then after that time period, then I went to Westover Air Force Base until 1970.
And where is Westover?
That's in Massachusetts.
Okay. How was Massachusetts? Was it a different
atmosphere? Different atmosphere.
Okay.
Yes, people were warm. Of course, there's always subtle prejudice, but it wasn't as overt as I experienced in Kentucky or in Alabama.
Down south.
In the southern states, right?
Okay. Now, again, what was
But you have to realize also that even though I was in Massachusetts, but I'm still dealing with people, military peers who are up the south. So therefore, I still have to deal with it. But off the base, there was a different attitude about me as a black person or even find a place to live.
Were there other African-American officers did you interact with? Or, what would you say the makeup of the base or just where you worked? Were you often the only person?
Normally there was predominant white, not many black female officers.
Okay.
In a lot of cases, I recall, I was the only black officer, senior ranking officer on the base a lot of times.
As a lieutenant?
Maybe not as a lieutenant, but not many. Maybe 10 or 12 at the most. The ones that I came in contact with, that there were not many female black officers around at all.
Okay.
So most of my peers were all white, as a matter of fact. And it's sad to say that I, to some degree, I feel comfort around my white peers than blacks because of those ones that I worked with most of the time.
I can understand that. I can understand that.
Yes.
What about when you came home? How did your family feel and react to you being in the military?
My family, they were elated. My father particularly, he wanted me to wear my uniform. He was glad. He was very impressed with my military. Each time I came home, I had to wear my uniform and wear it to church because he wanted people to see me in the military.
Okay.
Yes, he was very impressed.
Okay, good.
But my father did not want me to go in the military in the beginning.
Oh, he did?
No, he did not.
He was against it, okay.
He was against it.
Did you take that into consideration? Or?
I took it, but I had my own mind, and I followed through with what I wanted to do, and I went in.
Okay.
Yes.
So, what was your next station? How long were you at in
Westover.
yes.
I was there 67 to 1970, and then from there I went to after school, 1970 to 1971. I went to Michigan State University, East Lansing. That's where I got my master's degree, paid by the Air Force.
You were still active duty?
I was still active duty. Went there as a captain. The military Air Force paid my full fare, had full salary, and there I received my master's degree, paid by the military.
What so from there you went back to?
From there I went back to 1971. I went back to Scott Air Force Base, which was in Illinois.
What was your, how had your position changed as you were promoted? What different types of things did you do as opposed to when you first came in as a lieutenant?
Coming back, of course, once I came back from Michigan State, I had more responsibilities and I was looked at differently. But how I was frowned upon because I had that advanced degree. There was a senior officer whom I worked with. She tried her best to get me out of the military because she knew that I had the background. I had a master's degree. I went to a thing called AFIT, Air Force Institute of Technology. I got my master's there, but she did not have her master's, and she did everything in her power to degrade me and to keep me from making rank. It was a bad experience.
Was it you against her? Did you have other officers?
It was she mainly, actually, who tried to pull me down. But during that time period, I had a friend, a black male, who had bad experience in the military. And that's where I contacted him. And I used him as my mentor.
Sure.
A dietitian.
Okay.
When I left Michigan State, I went to Scott Air Force Base. That was in 1971 to 73. I had my first experience of working with another dietitian, senior dietitian, a Fulbright colonel at the time. She did not have her advanced degree, and she did everything in her power to try to help me get promoted, and also wrote me bad efficiency reports. And there is where I had my first encounter of knowing how to struggle and fight to stay in the military and know the meaning of power when I was in the military. And also learned with the military that you cannot be submissive. You have to, if you believe in something, you have to stick with it and keep pressing.
How did you address what she was trying to do? What were the procedures?
Oh, yes. Definitely. One thing for sure, in the military, if you're going to agree to the military with anyone, you must always work out of your chain of command. That's the first important thing to do. Always make sure that you're on your best behavior. Make sure that your uniform and things are up to the standards of the military. Your shoes shine, your hair combed, your uniform's pressed. Make sure that you talk to the right people. But most of all, work out of your chain, because if you work within your chain, then any and everyone can stop you. So I had to work out of my chain. And at the time, I had a mentor to help me to work out of my chain, help me to get promoted, and also help me to fight the issue.
Did you get it resolved to your satisfaction, or did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
From that, it was a hard struggle, but I got assignment in Japan where I wanted to go. I knew a dietitian, the chief of the corps. She knew the problem that I was having, and she made it possible for me to get to Japan. I had someone else on my side at the time.
Okay, so that's where you went from.
I went from Scott into Japan. I went to Techikawa, Japan, from 1973 to 1975. Techikawa Air Force Base in Japan.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about your impressions of Japan.
I was very impressed. Very impressed with Japan.
People,
it was a learning experience. And I think anyone in the U.S., anyone in the world, they should always get overseas. That is where I learned that there is no place like home. And that is the U.S. I learned no place like home. There I saw poverty. I saw people living in poor condition. It was just a different environment than what I was used to. And I learned to say, yes, I appreciate the U.S. by being overseas. It was an excellent tour. I learned about culture, I learned about people. I have girlfriends now that I still correspond with from Japan. We maintain contact. Most of my peers there and people that I work with, they were all Japanese. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. And how long were you there?
I was there from 73 to 75.
Did you travel to any other places?
Yes, I traveled all over the Far East. Every place that I could possibly go, I went in Japan. There, of course, the military, you can travel on military aircraft free of charge.
Right.
And so therefore, I took advantage of all my benefits, and I traveled to Hong Kong, Singapore, Taipei, Taiwan. I went all over the Far East. As much as I could travel and I could get away, I traveled. And I totally enjoyed that assignment.
Were you working with other, with the Japanese that were military or civilian?
These were all civilian counterparts, but also we had military personnel over there, I understand that. But most of my personnel, they were all of the Japanese. And my secretary, she was a Japanese lady also. Most of the cooks, they were all Japanese counterparts.
Everyone was fluent in English? So
it was fluent in English, yes.
Okay.
And of course, and being in a foreign country, you have to learn some of their language. And there you have to realize also that I was a foreigner in their country, and I had to act accordingly.
Well, did you pick up a lot of
Japanese?
I picked up
some of the Japanese. I learned how to speak some big terms, but mainly how to travel, how to communicate, such hello, how to be courteous, hello, how to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And I also learned how to read some of the kanji, because in travel, in the countryside, you might not find much English. So therefore, you need to know some of the kanji in order how to get around. And surprising, most people, you could always find someone who spoke English, because English is the dominant language all over the world.
Okay.
But you had to search for it.
What did you get a feel from the native Japanese, how they felt about Americans or African Americans in particular?
They saw us as Americans. It wasn't a black
wasn't
or white.
American.
It was not color. We were all Americans.
Okay.
Sometimes dumb Americans, but we were all Americans.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
So at this point, what is your rank at this time?
At this time, upon retirement, my rank is...
No, I mean, when you were in Japan.
I think it was probably captain.
Okay.
A senior captain, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Let me check out my history here. Yeah, probably senior captain, yes.
Where did you go from Japan?
From Japan, I went to Fairchild Air Force Base in Washington State. It was from 75 to 76.
Oh, that's the Great Northwest.
Cold. Besides being cold and rainy, actually, and there, actually, I liked that too also. I didn't come in contact with a lot of the racial Southern-type attitudes as I did at Scott or in Fellows, with places like at Air Force or UC here. Illinois. No, it wasn't there at all.
Did you get to get out into some of the cities in the state?
I always make a point of doing that.
Okay.
I'm doing that of learning cultures, and I made a point of always getting off the base, traveling the city. As a matter of fact, I live off the base, being a single person, I didn't have independence. The Air Force said that I had to live off base. Now, if I had dependents, such as my parent, then I could have stayed on base, but I had to live off base.
Okay. Now, looking at the makeup of the base, were there still not a lot of African Americans? This would have been 1970?
Oh, Fairchild, that was in 1975 to 76, right?
Okay.
I never saw a lot of black-ranking black officers. There were all a lot of enlisted type. But not the rank officers. And I think, I can't say for sure, but there was always a quota set in my mind as to how many blacks were on different bases. And I can't swear upon this, but there was always a count to my knowledge that I didn't see a lot of blacks at any one location where I was assigned.
Well, just a comment, I'd heard that from the woman I mentioned to you earlier that had served in the Coast Guard, and this was in the 80s, when she tried to join up, she was told by the Air Force that they could only take in so many women and that there was a wait for her to serve. And so that's why she ended up going into the Coast Guard. So I figured that there was probably that type of thing
Yeah, there's a quote, because I knew of an incident when there was some time when the military were, they were downgrading these services, all military service, and there were a lot of black officers that lost their rank or they were put out. And to my mind, I think there was a time where there was a quota being set, and I just had this feel that there was a reason for this downgrade, and I know there was a lot of black men who were affected by this downgrade.
Okay.
But I don't have the facts to prove all of this.
Okay, a couple of things. I want to go back a little bit, but also, I think that might relate to the military reflecting the population. You know, maybe they were keeping the percentages. If African Americans made up 10%.
You might have a point there.
And I get the feeling that that's something along those lines. But what was what were your thoughts on Vietnam, and how did that affect? Because I know Vietnam was going on, or just ended.
Yeah.
Or go back a little bit.
Okay, I did. Because I think that was when I was at Fairchild's in 75 or 76, I think, like that time period. Of course, I didn't go to Vietnam, but I was affected in a sense because I lost quite a bit of my staff who had to go to Vietnam. And even though I didn't go there, we fought just as hard in the U.S. because we had to maintain the base in the U.S.
Right.
So therefore, and work with limited staff, you still had to maintain a certain function. So it was difficult for us. People don't hear this, or don't know this, but being on stateside during the wartime, we worked just as hard in order to maintain this
base. Right. Did you know of people, any people that you knew personally?
I have two cousins who were lost in Vietnam. They were missing in action, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I went to go to years, yes.
Now, okay, so back to your last, where did you go next?
After Fairchild's in Washington State, I went to Tyndall Air Force Base, which is in Florida, from 76 to 79. That was in Florida.
And then you ranked, you were still captain?
I think there's when I started, I put on, made the rank of major.
Okay.
I started going up in rank at that time.
And had you had any more experiences where fellow officers either didn't like, didn't resented your rank?
Mm-hmm.
Was Florida?
That also, I difficult when other white officers, well, were passed them as a routine courtesy, you had to salute the rank.
Mm-hmm.
I had to call people back to salute me a lot of times, right? And you have to call back, otherwise it would keep going.
You mean just like, hey, stop?
Hey, or even just turn the head in order to keep them speaking. Yes, that would happen. And a lot of times I had to call back and say, you are passing officer, it's a ranking officer passing me. They would give me a frown and nod, but they knew that they better salute.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Even in coming through the gates, there was always an officer sticker, I had to stop there and say, here, I'm an officer's car passing here. Yes, to make them salute. Understand, you're not saluting the person, you're just saluting the rank.
Okay.
Yes.
How long were you in Florida?
I was in Florida, it was at, from 76 to 79. And then from there I went to Barksdale Air Force Base in 79 to 83, that was in Louisiana. Back to the South.
Back to the South, man. Had things changed any when you got back? Besides your being higher ranked?
Things did change, either that I was higher ranked, but I wasn't as conscious about the prejudices about in my environment. And I said because, again, the military, they make it a point of making you aware of where to live. And what the climate is, so therefore I kind of knew what to expect from that point on. And
what did they tell you about Louisiana? What to expect?
Actually, they don't tell you verbally, even though we have our little briefings going on different bases, but they will let you know other the areas which was kind of on the racial side, and we knew not to tread in those areas, such as restaurants not to go into, communities not to move into. These things are normally outlined for you.
And this is in 19?
This was in probably 1979.
And so it's not that you couldn't go, but the chances of trouble.
It was there, actually. So therefore, they're trying to screen you. And being an officer, They expect you to act accordingly. So I knew not to tread in places where I should not live, because I would have been in trouble because I had been told not to go to this area.
Well, how did you feel about that? I mean, I can understand that, but did that bother you that those things?
It bothered, and I can say that I didn't go, mm-hmm. just to see what the climate was like.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't make it a point of staying long in those areas either.
Okay.
You know, I tried to just maintain a status about myself, because ever I was an officer, and I had to conduct myself accordingly. I always kept it up front. I'm an officer, and I can't let others or anything be a deterrence to my status.
Okay. So at this point, you're a major?
Yes, I was a major.
Right? And so again, you're further up along the chain? And
yeah, up the chain.
More responsibilities?
More responsibility. Yeah, not just a dietitian. You understand also that besides being a dietitian, I had to be a soldier. So I was a soldier as well as a dietitian. I had to learn the military protocols, doing details, doing investigations. And one time when I was, after Borch, I went back to Scott Air Force Base in 83 to 85,
mm-hmm.
I had to conduct an investigation on another black female officer. She was in a car accident, and they chose me to do the investigation and had to write the written report. At that time, I knew the military, and I wrote the report in such a way in order to protect her, to maintain her status in the Air Force. I you can call it reasoning, whatever you wanted to, but I did it.
Okay.
In order to maintain, because I knew this was done to other officers.
And so it could have been the end of her career.
It could have been the end of her career. So okay. I made sure that the report that I complete on her was written into her favor. I support. You have to support your own.
Right.
Yes.
Were there other African American female officers under your command?
No.
Still.
In most places, I was always the only dietitian, except when I was at Scott Air Force Base. All my assignments always worked alone.
Okay.
I was always the only dietitian, and when I got to the rank, I was the only black person, on the senior officer on most military bases, most of the time. When I started getting from rank, from major up until the rank of lieutenant colonel.
Now, had you decided at this point, or even before that, that this was, you're going to make a career out of this? Because you're pretty far into it now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, no, at that point, back at Scott Air Force, back when I was about 10 years in the military, I was going to get out. I was headed to get out because I wasn't used to the kind of power struggle
that
went on. I didn't know anything about it until my friend made a point, comment, don't ever let one person control your life, and that's what held me in.
This is the mentor that you...
Stop me. Don't ever let one person control your life. And I stayed in, and I fought it. But there were a lot of crying days, a lot of crying nights. I was getting out.
Okay. So, what was your next stop? This was 83?
From 83, I went back to Scott, from 83 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
That's back to Scott Air Force Base. Again, had a struggle there also.
Power struggle.
A power struggle there at Scott. At the time I was making rank, I was now a lieutenant colonel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a power struggle. They kept me from doing consultant duties that was entitled to me there. And I also, that my rank was being held, and I was not giving respect to my department or to my rank at that time.
And this is, so it's not just one person, this might be just the climate of the office.
It's the climate of the environment. I understand that I'm not degrading the Air Force. I'm just degrading the people.
Individuals. Right.
The service is a wonderful place to be for anyone who wants to get ahead and for experience of our education. It's just the people that you deal with. They make it difficult for you. The service are fine. I have a lot of respect for the U.S., for my country. And I never will forget that.
Okay.
Yes.
So, was this your final?
From Scott, I went back. Then that's when I went to Amador Air Force Base in Alaska.
Alaska. Okay.
Yeah, that was from 1985 to 88. Another great tour.
Wow, I've always wanted to go to Alaska.
Yes. So, another great tour.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You got to get out and see.
I saw all of Alaska, a beautiful country. Yes.
Now, how were the people?
Different,
I guess.
Of course, there, you know, in Alaska, in most overseas countries, It's not overseas, but it was so far from the U.S. We sometimes call it an overseas assignment. We were all actually there for a purpose, and we knew that we were coming back stateside, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I understand. I know Alaska is a state, mm-hmm. but again, it was so far from home,
right.
So we sometimes put it on the outskirts of everything else. I get along well there. I travel all over Alaska. I didn't have any problems in Alaska. But there's always a power struggle. There's always a power struggle. Surprising, always a power struggle. And when you're up in the rank, you will always have that power struggle.
It gets worse as you go.
It gets worse as you get ranked. Yes, it's higher, harder.
What were your, you're getting close to time when you retire.
Yes.
What were your thoughts?
Whenever I was lieutenant colonel, when I was in Alaska, there I was becoming burnt out at that point. I knew that I was burnt out because at that point, I was telling the senior officer what I was and was not going to do. I knew the military.
Okay.
So therefore, I told them things they want me to take responsibility for. I told them I'm not going to do that because I know that it's not going to help them make a rank or anything. So I got by. I wasn't getting by. I just knew what I was talking about. You know what you're talking about. If you don't know, keep your mouth closed. Yes.
Okay. What were the steps? I mean, this was your last tour?
I went to Amador from 1985 to 1988, and then I came back to Florida to Homestead Air Force Base in 1988 to 1992. And from that point on, I was definitely ready to get out. Because I was burned out entirely at the time. Through the Hurricane Andrew. And because of that, actually, again, the military, they knew the trauma that we all went through in the hurricane. And they gave everyone a base of their choice. Because we all had a lot of mental problems from the hurricane. So therefore, knowing I was getting out, I went to a Walson Army based in New Jersey. I knew some friends there. I knew that I wanted to go to the East Coast to settle down for a while. So I went there and just did consulting work. Just traveled about and working.
Consulting with other military establishments or
military
civilian?
Establishments.
Okay.
Mainly working with the Quality Assurance Department. Just traveling and making sure quality assurance was established in the Air Force hospitals.
Okay.
Yes. From that point on. And yet from that point on, I was there from 92 to 93, and I got out in 1993.
Just to backtrack before we go on and talk about some more things,
mm-hmm.
What was the hurricane like?
I have been through the eye of a hurricane. I know what it's like. It's a lot of mental trauma going through it, and there were times it was such a trauma there. Actually, I had to come into my house, be alone, sit in the corner by myself, just not to see the tragedy that went on. Mother Nature did her job, and she did it well.
Okay.
From Hurricane Andrew.
Okay.
Actually, it was there also. I think that I began to realize really how important life was more. After going through the hurricane.
Okay.
I think I liked that more. Because I remember that I to bring in all of my furniture from off my patio. I was told the day before that hurricane was approaching.
Uh-huh.
And I brought in everything off my patio, taped my windows up. The Air Force let us know that this was hurricane season. They gave us literature what to read, how to prepare for it, and I read it and I did just that. The Air Force would give you information. I prepared for it. I had canned goods in the house, I had water in the house, I had tape in the house, I had batteries in the house. I was prepared for it, but I was alone. And I slept in the bathroom on the floor at Fortnite. Because I was now in a secluded area, meaning to protect myself.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was on the floor in the bathroom all night, with all my important papers wrapped in plastic bags and everything. just in case there was a flood and water to come into my house. I had to get up and protect myself and dad from the outside environment.
I mean, it was pretty, I can't imagine, but it was pretty scary.
It was scary, but I can say that there is something to being alone and something to believe in at this point. I believe that I will survive it. Because I know I would tell my parents back home, my mother's a very religious person, and she says she had the church to pray for me. And I went to bed the night and I slept like a baby. I had no fears until I got and saw the disaster that hurt me.
What had happened?
What had happened? And from that point on, the Air Force took care of us. They gave me the assignment of my choice. Everybody. They came in and they worked like champs. They made sure that we were mentally prepared to move on with our next assignments. That's an experience also.
Okay, so you went to the base of your choice, and then you were discharged from that. That was your last stop?
Yeah, actually, from Homestead, then that's when I went actually to Walston Army Hospital, New Jersey, and this is where I got my transition from the service. And military made sure that we had a transition period. We went through training for about 6 months.
Okay.
We have to transition us out into the civilian world.
Did you know then at that point, or think that you did not want to come back to Kentucky?
At that point, I wanted to come back to Kentucky, as a matter of fact. No, at the first point, I was going to settle on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first preference. But also realizing at the time that I was still a single person, and I it's best that I would be around a support factor. So I came back to Kentucky.
Okay.
And that's the reason why I came back home.
Okay. Well, so have you been pretty much here, or?
Pretty much here.
In Louisville?
Yes. But coming back to Kentucky, Louisville, I had to remember to say that. Louisville, Kentucky.
right.
I wonder now if that was the best choice move for me, because I have grown, but the city has not grown to the magnitude that I have grown.
Okay.
The city is about 10 years behind my era of thinking and doing, and I find it very difficult, even particularly my family. My family sees me as when I left here, but now I'm 30 years older, and I've grown and have a lot of experience, more.
Seen the world.
I've seen the world, more than my family have had.
What was, even with the transition training, what was it difficult to get used to being a civilian again?
It was, actually, because even use the times or dates. In military, particularly, how to talk with people, I haven't learned that yet, and I would not change this, actually. You say what you got to say, and you come out of there, so to speak. There's not a lot of assuming reading between the lines, because the military as an officer, you might have lives that depend on what you say. So there's no lot of talking and assuming. You speak what you have to say, come out of it, and go on to something else. And my family called me very blunt because I do that. But I have been brainwashed to think and act that way.
Made a career. Certain way. Did you work when you came out?
I'm retired. Actually, when I was in New Jersey for a year prior to coming home, and I did a little odd jobs, a little simple job, like as work in a coat factory, in Burlington coat factory, as a clerk, work as a cashier. I wanted something totally different than what I've been trained to do, but realizing that I didn't want to work. And also, I worked, I think it was in a home health aid. I taught home health aid people, and I did that for maybe about 6 months. And that was more on the professional line. So I guess I enjoyed doing that, actually.
Well, I want to kind of maybe get some overall impressions and some general thoughts on the military, your thoughts on the military related to African Americans and just, I guess, military period. What, looking back on your career, how do you feel about the Air Force?
The Air Force. Anyone who was starting out in a career and not sure of themselves, I would think the Air Force is a place to go. Yes. Yes, it's a good experience. There you can get your education if you so desire. It teaches you discipline. It teaches you I'm trying to think here. It makes a overall whole person out of you. You just learn so much emotional control. I'm not sure that's good or bad, but actually, I guess you're yeah, called so. A discipline. Actually.
Okay.
Yes.
And as an African American, do you think? Okay, let's look at it from the time you entered and when you left and today. Do you think there's a level playing field in the military?
A level playing?
Playing field as far as opportunities. Do you think things, or is there still subtle racism?
There's subtle racism, and there's opportunity. As an African American, you must be at the right place at the right time and have a good mentor. You cannot do it alone. You need a mentor, someone who has the experience, someone to pull you along. No, you can't do it alone.
Okay.
Absolutely anyone, but with an African American, if you want to make rank and stay there, you need support. Someone who has similar experiences.
Is there any, and I've heard this used in other circles, if you, an African American would have to do it a little better?
Well, you have to work harder.
Harder.
Oh, no, actually, right. There's no 100%. You do 110%, even more.
Okay.
No, you have to work harder and longer.
Okay.
Yes. You work hard if you want to stay there and make rank. You have to work harder than your counterparts. That's a must.
Okay.
But always make sure, I'm off the track of you, always make sure you're right. Whatever you do, make sure you're right.
No, that, yeah, I mean, those are the kind of things.
Yes, make sure you're right what you're doing.
And when you know you're right,
don't hold back. You don't hold back, you go for it. Because when I had my problems, I was going to stop it. I said, no, don't stop this, go on. But I had to push it on. Yes, you must go for it, but don't stop it. Because that's what they're looking for. It's power.
You
want to give in. There's power and money. It's like in civilian life. There's power, a lot of power play. And when you start making rank, there is more power. Lieutenant Colonel, a black female in the Air Force. As a matter of fact, I was about the third highest ranking dietitian in the Air Force. That's right.
Okay.
Yes. And so therefore, I did not get assignments. I won a lot of time, and my counterparts who were senior than I, they made sure that I wasn't exposed at the right time, at the right places. But that's okay. I made it anyway.
Okay. Well, Ms. Clark, do you have any other comments or any other things, statements you'd like to make? Or?
I say it's been a good interview. It's difficult for me to talk about myself and my military because I never thought anyone was interested. Probably leave here, I probably would think of more to say because some experiences that I would probably have forgotten and intended because it was such a difficult times for me, particularly when my rank was held up and the time that I was given a hard time. And things that I couldn't justify, even little things like force me to not to follow rules or regulations. These things, you got to know what you're doing if you're going to be in the military. Know your regulations. And know your manuals. Always be an officer and carry yourself with dignity. And this you will carry with you even in civilian life. It's something that you will never outgrow.
Okay. I do have one more question, and this is something you mentioned earlier, and I've heard it from other veterans. In spite of troubles, in spite of subtle racism, being in the military, I mean, that's something that you're proud of.
Yes.
And that. Why do you think, and maybe try to, I don't know if you can speak for other African Americans, but that tends to be a theme that from day one, African Americans, when the country called, they went.
Yes.
Regardless of the fact that their white counterparts might not even want them there.
Yes, I was willing to go to Vietnam to fight for
my
country.
Why do you think that is? What?
Is it
patriotism?
It's patriotism. I have, even when I see the flag, I have a patriotism about it. I can even get tears when I hear the Star Spangled Banner or even singing. I make it a point that I have a love for this country.
Okay.
Yes, in regards to regardless of my bad experience, I have a love for the year because, as I said earlier, there's no place like home.
This is home.
This is home. We have our problems here, but there is no better place. I've seen starvation. I've seen poverty. I've seen almost anything you probably can imagine, which you might call a bad experience happening to you, but there's no place like the U.S. as far as my home. This is my home, and will always be my home.
Okay.
The United States of America.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you for your time. This concludes our interview with Mary Frances Clark.
I'm not sure.